This is Our Anxiety Stories, the Anxiety Canada podcast. This is the place where people from all walks of life share their anxiety stories to remind you that you are not alone. If you have an anxiety story you'd like to share, contact us at anxietycanada.com/our-anxiety-stories.
Hi, I'm Mark Anchak, and you're listening to Our Anxiety Stories, the Anxiety Canada podcast that can be found on anxietycanada.com or any of the other major streaming platforms. My guest today is Dr. Matthew Chow, who is the Chief Mental Health Officer at TELUS Health, a global leading health and well-being company serving nearly 70 million people across 160 countries. Dr. Chow is a past president of Doctors of British Columbia and was the founding medical director of e-mental health services and strategy at BC Children's Hospital. He is a psychiatry fellow of the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada in the specialty of child and adolescent psychiatry. Welcome, Matt. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited to have this chat with you today because you bring such a rich and unique perspective with just how influential your role is in the background of mental health. So why don't we start with the obvious question, which is the title of our podcast. What is your anxiety story?
Wow. Where do I begin? I've actually been dealing with anxiety most of my life, at least since I was 8 years old. It started with generalized anxiety. Then I started getting panic attacks when I was attending university. You couple that with social anxiety as well as some profound fear of public speaking, you know, which I'm going to speak a little bit more about later on. But such a profound fear that I almost threw up on one of my classmates when I was asked to do a speech in front of our whole high school. And so that was certainly one of the more memorable moments, when I realized, okay, this is getting to be a bit of an issue. And so continuing to muddle through and deal with that eventually before getting help, getting support, and going on a bit of a recovery journey from anxiety and now being able to talk to you about anxiety today and hopefully help lots of other folks out there that are also dealing with this issue.
I mean, such a full circle moment. It sounds like it's been something that you've been navigating for a sizable chunk of time. Where do you feel you are along that journey at this point in time?
You know, anxiety is one of those things that even as you overcome it and recover from it, it's still, you know, there's still shades of it there. And the shades of it that I get are, you know, when I'm, you know, in a public speaking role or position, when I have to present to a huge group of people, when I'm doing a podcast like this. And also, you know, in terms of just sometimes feeling like, wow, like, did I really make it? Like, did I really overcome this? And then I kind of realize, you know, after doing enough of this that like, yeah, actually, you know, I really have, you know, come a really long way, especially upon reflection. And so I can say, you know, I feel very comfortable with where I am and who I am today along that anxiety recovery journey. And, you know, I know that each and every one of us who deals with anxiety is capable of achieving that kind of recovery journey as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so much of what this podcast even is about is being able to highlight folks in positions such as yours, folks that have such high responsibilities, such high achievements, and to be able to say, you know what, this is quite normal. This is a thing that a lot of people deal with. And I know in our previous chat, you had mentioned that one of your personal mission statements is to enable people and teams to make their highest and best possible contributions as authentic human beings. And I'm just curious, with that one in mind, which kind of barriers have you observed that might prevent people from reaching that goal? But in particular in the workplace, you had mentioned imposter syndrome.
Yeah. So imposter syndrome is certainly something that a lot of folks deal with. And it's interesting, you know, imposter syndrome seems to have no bounds. I see people feeling like they're imposters when they're recovering from or dealing with anxiety. I also see very highly successful folks, you know, very self-confidence folks also dealing with a degree of imposter syndrome. So going back to, you know, some of those barriers that prevent us from being, you know, the very, very best, you know, some of them are systemic factors, right? So, if you're in a group of folks that, you know, don't see yourself reflected in leadership, don't see yourself reflected in, you know, that new risky and challenging and yet rewarding activity that you're thinking of doing, you know, you're gonna have more of that imposter syndrome, more of that difficulty moving forward. And then there's also, you know, internal factors, right? If you're dealing with an anxiety disorder, if you're getting panic attacks, if you're like me and you had this profound fear of social speaking, you know, that gets in the way as well. And those are certainly barriers that we want to see addressed. And then particularly in the workplace, you know, these days, you know, there's high pressure environments all around. I'm a healthcare worker. Healthcare is really hard right now. But that could be said of a lot of different industries. Anyone that works in the travel industry knows that that's hard right now. Anyone that, you know, works in manufacturing, and or any job that, you know, really, you know, has to be done in person, you know, they've never let up. You know, even during the pandemic, they were going to work every day, and sometimes facing huge risks. And so, you know, for someone that's dealing with anxiety, that, you know, that poses a barrier too. And, you know, I hate to say it, but still a little bit, even in this day and age, a little bit of stigma still there, a little bit of stigma around anxiety, a little bit of misunderstanding of what mental illness and mental recovery kind of looks like. And in some workplaces, still this feeling that, like, you know what, I've got to keep up with everybody else, and I don't want to let on that I'm struggling with this issue, because I don't want to look like the weakest link. So all of those factors kind of combined.
Yeah, it's that constant kind of like fight or flight. Like, am I doing enough? Am I proving my worth? Am I able to showcase that I'm bringing something valuable, or am I going to get in trouble for not showing up in the way that I need to? It's making a lot of those comparisons, I hear a lot of folks making.
Yeah, and it you know, if you know, part of what feeds into that is sometimes this tendency to measure people's worth by, like, what they put out, what their productive output is. And you know, certainly that's part of what's important about what we do at work, but that's not everything, right? We also have intrinsic value as human beings. We also have intrinsic value regardless of what our level of performance is, and that's really important as well. And I find, you know, certainly in my own experience, something that drives anxiety or sort of drags it up from the depths is when I start leaning too far into that, you know, my measure of worth is what I put out versus my measure of worth is that I'm a worthwhile human being to begin with, you know, that's worthy and deserving of respect and love and support regardless. And then starting from that frame of reference.
It really reminds me of a lot of the conversations I have with my own patients in practice, just talking about self-compassion and that notion that we really do have to practice being kind to ourselves because of that external validation that we get through accomplishments or through what it is that we achieve. And it sounds like you will often or sometimes will oscillate to that end of the spectrum where you notice yourself going to that point of, oh, like I should be doing more. Am I enough? How do you kind of gauge when you've gone too far to the spectrum or one end of the spectrum or the other?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I've become keenly aware of when I'm edging into that danger territory of, you know, devaluing myself, and having that having that negative sense or maladaptive sense of self-worth start to crop up. And some of the warning signs that I look out for is, like, first off, I check in with my body, right? And so, you know, as a person that's dealt with anxiety, I know how anxiety feels like in my body. And for a lot of us, it's, you know, in our stomach, it's in our, you know, and, you know, causing us headaches, causing it us to have difficulty sleeping, difficulty concentrating. You know, it's that tenseness that starts to develop in our muscles. And so I'm keenly aware of my bodily reactions to anxiety. I'm also keenly aware of my psychological reactions, you know, to anxiety. When I start to feel, you know, you know, that imposter syndrome cropping up, you know, am I good enough? You know, are people thinking that I'm the weakest link? Am I producing enough? Am I being good enough? Right. And those are more warning signs that, okay, starting to edge into that danger zone. And funny enough, like, a lot of this, I think people on outside of me don't notice. And you know, having interviewed, just like you have, many people that have dealt with anxiety, you know, as anxiety sufferers, we're always acutely aware of how we're feeling, and sometimes thinking that other people notice it as well. And when I've asked, you know, almost invariably people say, "Well, I didn't notice that you were anxious at all."
That's
interesting, you know, to note that.
I resonate with that so strongly, because the amount of times I've had someone really point out that incongruence between what I felt and what they saw almost seems like a predictable pattern. And the things that you're noting sounds almost kind of like these red flag markers, some based in cognition, so our thoughts, that negative self-talk. And it sounds like some of those kind of behaviors or those physiological sensations in our body very much resonate with that same piece where, like, you know, my nails might get bit a little too often, or I might just get like chronic stomach aches. Going off this piece of performance and imposter syndrome, I'm curious with respect to the public speaking that's required in your role. Can you tell us a little bit about the intersectionality between how imposter syndrome impacts your ability to do public speaking, and how do those two, influence each other?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was reminded recently that public speaking is actually hard for most people. You know, I was giving a talk, and I asked this room of very accomplished leaders, you know, folks that have led projects, lead big teams, you know, have responsibility for, you know, millions and millions of dollars. You know, how many of you actually enjoy public speaking? And I think two people put up their hands in a room of more than 50. Right? And so that reminded me, you know, public speaking is actually pretty hard. And then you add on top of that, if you're someone that already experiences that imposter syndrome, meaning that you feel like you don't deserve to be there. You feel like you don't deserve those accolades. You believe you don't deserve that promotion. You believe that you don't deserve to be where you are. And now you're going to being asked to speak to 50 people, 100 people, 500 people, 1,000 people or more. And that those two things really collide, that imposter syndrome and this sort of fear of public speaking. And that's been my experience, you know, especially as I go into more and more prominent and public roles. You know, the president of Doctors of BC certainly was one of those very public roles. It happened during the pandemic, so that made it, you know, extra public. And certainly the role that I'm in now, there's certainly the intersection between imposter syndrome and the fear of public speaking. But I'll tell you what, realizing that other people feel it too, no matter how high performing they are. You know, I had a colleague confide in me recently that when they had to give a talk in front of something like 1,500 or 2,000 people, like, that was nerve-wracking for them. You know what? I'll tell you, if you ask any of the 1,500 or so people that listened to this person speak, they didn't notice this person skipping a beat. It was a flawless performance. But this person shared with me, and this is someone that I've, you know, would say is a very highly confident and self-assured individual, that, hey, this is actually a difficult thing to do. And so that self-compassion comes in, that, like, oh, you know what? I guess that's okay that I feel some of that angst as well. It just means that this is something that's important to me.
Yeah. No. Well, they talk about the Yerkes-Dodson curve in research, right? Where a little bit of anxiety typically could really enhance performance because it motivates us, it galvanizes us, but too much of it could impede performance. But it seems like a lot of us with imposter syndrome really go to that end of the spectrum where we think we're so stressed that we just don't think we can perform. But that clearly doesn't seem to be the case more often than not.
Yeah. I love how you put that, like, a certain degree of anxiety is expected. And that's, you know, certainly when I've worked with patients over the years, something I've had to deal with is sometimes folks have an expectation that, like, I want to be completely anxiety free. Right. And I'm like, well, are you sure you want that? Because, you know, too much anxiety absolutely, you know, causes suffering, right? It causes physical suffering, causes psychological suffering. You know, makes it hard to get through the day. But an appropriate amount of anxiety, you know, can actually be, as you point out, something that's actually adaptive. Something that's helpful, especially if it's something that we've learned to cope with and deal with and actually turn that energy into something that's positive. So yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great reminder to folks that, like, we're the aim of the game might not necessarily be to like completely eliminate this normal human experience that we have, all of us have, of some degree of anxiety, but rather to harness that energy and to turn it into something useful. And certainly, if it's something that's excessive, and certainly my experience, when I was younger, was that it was excessive levels of anxiety to deal with that and to get help when you need it to deal with that.
Absolutely. One of the questions I really want to ask just around the imposter syndrome, given how public the roles are that you're currently in and have been in, I imagine any kind of constructive criticism or even just people giving their opinions that are counter to what you might be sharing hits extra hard. I know that I've experienced that a number of times where someone might just agree or disagree with an opinion you have. How have you found that process for you, or how have you found your ability to kind of disengage from that or create some separation from that piece?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly got a crash course in how to deal with that during the pandemic because, interviews I would do about, COVID-19 or the vaccination program, would go viral, and a lot of people would see it. I'd get messaged about it. And, invariably and unfortunately, and I got it, I would say a lot less than other very, very prominent folks. But like, unfortunately, that feedback came back fast and furious and wasn't always positive. And so I got a crash course in learning how to deal with that, because although some of the feedback was helpful, some of it was just really quite negative, toxic, hostile, not particularly life-giving. And so what I learned to do is, first off, make my own sort of self-evaluation of how I did before I even read the comments. Some people say, don't even read the comments, don't even read that stuff at all. And I, you know what? I get where they're coming from when they say that. I should try that out sometime. But certainly, doing a self-assessment of how I did and then sort of reading into it and then realizing, like, sometimes, especially for very negative and critical feedback, that's more a reflection of the person sharing it than it is of yourself and your own performance. And really taking that to heart, has been helpful, to help me be more objective about what that feedback is. I've also realized that, like, not all feedback's equal, right? Feedback that comes from people that care about you, that want you to grow as a human being, that want you to be better, I'll take that feedback a million times over feedback from some random troll on social media. That kind of random feedback's pretty meaningless, really. On the face of it, but feedback from somebody that, and I really want to emphasize this point, feedback from someone that cares about you, cares about your personal growth and development, that's gold. That is so important. And that person will deliver that feedback in such a way that helps you rather than hurts you.
Absolutely.
And that, I think, for any of us, whether we deal with anxiety or not, whether we deal with imposter syndrome or not, whether we deal with a fear of public speaking or not, I think is so crucial, is to separate out that truly constructive and useful feedback versus, what's basically noise.
It's such a great way of putting it. I've had someone once introduce to me that reading comments is like shopping for pain, because you're basically going online and you're looking at a lot of keyboard warriors or a lot of folks without any kind of identity or without any kind of backings, just sharing like really unproductive and kind of toxic type commentary.
100%. Yeah, people say things online that they would never dare say to you in person, face to face. So yeah, absolutely. And especially for someone dealing with anxiety, that toxic negativity online on social media is, it is not something that's mandatory for, right? Like, you can turn that off. You can step away from that. At one point, actually, I realized, deleting social media apps from my phone was probably one of the best and most healthful things that I did, for myself. I still check in on social media, like, I still use it, right? But intensive, excessive use was not particularly helpful on the anxiety recovery journey.
Absolutely. Yeah, just it turns into an echo chamber, just falling into those like Instagram comas. One of the kind of final pieces here that I'm curious to hear about. So we've been talking a little bit about how we manage imposter syndrome in the workplace. Do you have any kind of specific strategies that you would encourage folks implement if they're facing that really prominent anxiety, if they feel like they're not enough? And if there's any kind of TELUS initiatives that you'd like to share as well, around those pieces?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, self-compassion, I think, is so crucial. We talked about it earlier. I think that's the first step is realizing that, hey, you're not alone. There are a lot of people around the world, literally millions and millions and millions of people around the world that also experience anxiety, that have had similar experiences as you, who wake up every day and cope with this and struggle and recover and do well with it as well. So some self-compassion, I think, is in order. Reaching out for help. You know, there's been a real awakening about the importance of mental health and well-being. And so in most employed spaces now, people have access to services, benefits. You know, that's something that TELUS Health is really proud to provide to so many people around the world. But accessing those services and benefits to get help and support for your mental health and well-being to overcome anxiety is so crucial. That's something that I accessed those kind of supports when I was recovering from this, and it made such a difference. Letting people know, letting your coworkers know, letting your manager know that you're experiencing this issue. The number of times that people have told me that they've done that and then found so much help and support and realization that they were not alone is heartwarming. And, you know, certainly for the leaders out there and the influencers out there, be vocal about this. You know, at our company, even our most senior leaders are very transparent and open about dealing with mental health issues. And that creates a level of trust and respect and willingness to support one another and get help that is just so crucial, I think, to making the workplace, you know, a more safe and vibrant place and to help individuals and you know, who are experiencing anxiety, you know, that's so helpful. I mean, in terms of what, you know, my organization is doing, you know, breaking open, you know, the black box that is anxiety and talking to people about it, participating on a podcast like this is part of what we do, to show, you know, our awareness of mental health. You know, we track people's anxiety across the workplace, across the whole world, through something called the Mental Health Index that we publish monthly. And so we, you know, from that Mental Health Index, we are actually able to demonstrate to governments, policymakers, employers, employees, you know, the general public that anxiety is a real thing. It's actually growing as an issue. And so we build awareness, you know, about that and the importance of getting help. And then we provide a lot of services and help to people. Like we provide counseling services to people. We provide self-guided and therapy to people. We provide coaching to people to overcome this. We coach workplaces and employers on how they can make their workplace a healthier environment, not just to help people with anxiety, but to prevent it in the first place and to mitigate, you know, against, you know, mental health and well-being challenges, you know, overall. And we're strongly encouraged that we're seeing, you know, people really take that up, you know, whether it's governments, whether it's workplaces, really taking up that challenge, you know, to address this issue, to normalize it, to be self-compassionate about it, but also to re render help and support when it's required to help people be their very best.
I'm really hearing a mix of not just a reactive approach. You're offering a ton of resources that otherwise aren't typically there, but you're also offering a really proactive approach where you're trying to have folks think about this stuff ahead of time. We're allowing ourselves to be vulnerable with one another so we can have these conversations so we can destigmatize and address any issues as they come up rather than leaving them once they're really, really hard to handle.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. Like that's something that we're really proud of. And you know, I hope more and more organizations pick this up, is that it's not just about supporting people when they've fallen down or when they're suffering or when they're, you know, having difficulty coping. It's also about breaking down stigma, preventing challenges and issues in the first place, having psychologically safe workplaces in the first place so that people can be themselves. And mitigate against anxiety. You know, it's about leadership and transparency and demonstrating that these are important issues that we can support one another with. And it's about people who have experienced recovery or are still along their anxiety journey, to be able to share about that and to give hope and optimism to folks that are still experiencing, a lot of difficulty, to let them know that help and support is at hand and it's effective, and that it can change your life and, help you, be your very best.
Yeah. Truly, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on today. I think the perspective again is just so rich, and the work that you do is so important. We're really trying to adjust the foundations. We're really trying to aim for a paradigm shift, and I can't wait to see where TELUS goes with that. So thank you for joining us today, and yeah, I hope we get to chat again sometime soon.
So glad to be able to share today. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for listening to Our Anxiety Stories. If you'd like to support this podcast or Anxiety Canada, go to anxietycanada.com.